Don't Give Up Your Day Job, a local musician's guide by me, Paul Gillings. An educational and sometimes humorous look at what it's like to be part of the local music scene. Now in conjunction with Indie Kid Records. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Don't Give Up Your Day Job, the local musician's guide. Talking to members of the local music scene about what it is they do, how they do it, and, you know, what they do goes to make up our scene. But on this, I started it off as a bit of a sort of how-to guide, almost for myself, of how to rob people's ideas about how they promote themselves and to get their music and get themselves out there. But what I've managed to find in the meantime is some great personal stories of people's musical endeavours and what they've been doing. And one of the guys and one of the bands I've been quite interested in, because they do very well, have a great image and great music, well recorded, is the band Like Optimists. And I have Mr. Nathan Cochran with me today to have a chat. Hello, Nathan.
Hello,
you all right? I'm all right. We're still looking at our technical difficulties over here. And I think I need to probably up your mic a bit, despite having given you a whole bunch of sound checking there.
Yeah, so,
so thanks for coming over today, buddy. Yeah, what is it you're up to musically at the moment then?
So as we stand at the moment, obviously I am concentrating on Like Optimist music. I'm always writing, and as it stands we are just recording when we can, really. And with work and stuff and family life, it is limited. And that's why things take so long to come out, unfortunately, but they do come out eventually. So that is it, and I'm just trying to get gigs, just gigs some more,
gigs
really.
Some more.
So really, I would say at the moment we're concentrating on getting a catalogue of gigs whilst trying to record when we can.
So tell me about Like Optimists. So I didn't know until I investigated for this particular podcast that you guys had a full band. And yeah. I'm almost ashamed to say that I didn't know that, because I've literally seen you guys as an acoustic duo or a semi-acoustic electric-y duo with Azza on the old on the loop pedal, your partner in crime, who should have been here today. But bless him.
Yeah.
Let's move on. So tell me about, is it still a full band that you have?
Yes, yeah, still a full band, yeah. So there's me, obviously, there's Azza on the lead guitar, there's Cam on bass and James on drums.
Cam, would that, it's not Cam.
Cameron Thompson.
Cameron Thompson, do I know him? Is he involved in other projects? That sounds like a
familiar name. He's in AJQJ, obviously, which is Azza's band.
Okay.
He has been in other bands around the area, he was in a band called High Definition. For a while, I'm not sure if he still is.
Okay.
But yeah, other than that, I don't know if you would know him from anywhere else.
So you talked briefly there about getting some recording done, and I've had a search through your Spotify, upon which I found out that you had a full band and a drummer and everything.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of singles and EPs released, sort of. And the first one was 2018. Was that sort of? How long did you have the band before that and just start recording? Is that immediate, or were you together for a little while?
Well, as it started off, it's literally just me and Azza in a room tracking some songs, and we had our first song called I Never Knew. And we weren't really sure where it was going. We said, we'll do the tracks, the ones that we knew we were going to do, and then just release this one, see how it goes, and then we'll start gathering some people to try and actually make it a full act. You know?
Okay, that's interesting.
And we got through a few people on the way.
A lot of band auditions.
Some people
I tried to get people to talk about that. I love a bit of band politics. Yeah. I really do. Obviously, it's dodgy because we don't want to, you know, put fingers to names. But it, you know, we do all know those sorts of personalities.
Yeah.
And I guess because you and Azza had clicked so well, and I've had songwriting partners that well. I mean, Danny R and I are sort of, you know, a duo. We're solid. We know each other's sort of quirks and stuff like that. We spent 2 years in a room together, blah blah blah. Been writing, and it sounds like you there with Azza. It's got to be the right people, right, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's weird because if I'm going off topic here,
but when
it comes to an Optimist song, it literally starts off as an acoustic track. Everyone that we've released starts off with me and my mobile phone.
Yeah.
I don't have all this fancy gear, unfortunately. Azza has that at his house.
Sure,
but it starts off with me, song idea, I'll track what I can, just literally into a microphone. Okay. On my phone.
This is quite common with people recording on the phone, because the microphones in those smartphones are fantastic.
I'll send him the raw recording, and be like, what do you think? Should we go forward with it? He'll say yes or no. Or I'll go, I think this is good. Normally, the way it goes is if I'm really into it, we normally say yes, we'll do it.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a weird way of doing it, but he seems to trust me and I trust him. And
oh, really? Was it always like that or has that developed?
It's pretty much been like that from the start.
That's really lucky. That's really lucky.
I know I am.
Yeah, that's really lucky.
And he's such a talented guy as
well. Yeah, isn't
he? You've seen him go.
Oh, man. I mean, I was hoping he was here because I could apologise again. Yeah. For taking the piss out of his loop pedal.
Did you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I'd fairly, like, 2019, I was on before him at our local Carl Fest, I do believe. I've got Mr. Darren Steger-Lewis, organiser of such, coming to speak to me this week as well. So awesome. He'll be on future next
love
episode.
Darren.
Blinding guy. Love him. We all love him. Mostly for creating and bringing back the staple of our local music scene, the All-Dayer. That you love on all day, an all day. It's like all the bands from the local scene. You have a drink. There's hopefully sunshine. But I'm getting off topic now. There's going to be a whole episode about that. But I'm not really into him. But it was an Ed Sheeran with his loop pedal filling in. And I'd never seen one used really past that, and you know, a couple of mucking about. And then Azza went up and did this whole beatboxing, laying down guitar lines and stuff like that. And I have to say, having watched him do that, I went out and bought one.
Yeah, I've always been wanting to buy one. I've never got round to it.
And then said, I'm really sorry, because I was like, ooh, got a loop pedal because you ain't got no friends for a band. And, you know, took the piss. And that was a really shit thing for me to do. So I have apologised, you know, to him in person. I was hoping to do it again. But, it's an instrument all by itself, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? I think he'd forgive you, by the way. I don't think he's not
a vengeful
he's
person.
A nice guy. I think he'd forgive you. Don't worry.
That's all right then. So you've got like him with who's pretty good with the old technical yourself, who's coming up mostly initially with the songwriting ideas.
Yeah. Like I said, I'll send the acoustic track. We'll go from there, and it just evolves.
Yeah,
and that's such a nice thing.
That sounds lovely and creative.
That goes from. It's almost like a dream for me.
Really?
You know, when I was younger, I never had the confidence to do music. You know, in my school years, I wasn't... I'm a big lad. So, you know, I would get comments and stuff and people would laugh. And
Kids are evil.
They are. They're not nice.
They're really not.
I didn't even do music at school.
No?
I was always interested.
This is part of the journey that I like to ask people.
Yeah.
Why music? Why the guitar? And why the particular music that you do? I mean, what would you say your like optimist music is? What because we talked briefly beforehand about genres and subgenres and how the music industry as it is now digital wise likes to club you into a little genre and then sweep you under the carpet. So what would you say, what got you into playing your own music rather than just, you know, hearing it on the radio? Were your parents musical or anything like that?
Not really. Dad loved the band Oasis. He was obsessed.
Did he?
Still is. He still loves them.
That's probably my age.
And then I suppose I was going from my school years. I was growing up with like pop punk stuff, like Sum 41.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked Sum 41. I went through an Eminem phase when I was younger.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was very around. I guess you talked sort of late 90s, early noughties. He was everywhere, yeah.
And then I never forget, I was watching Kerrang TV.
Mm.
And Green Day came on.
Oh, yeah.
And the song Minority.
Yes.
And somehow, I'd never heard of Green Day.
Really?
Because I was young, the internet wasn't a massive thing then.
Basket Case was everywhere.
Yeah.
Like late
and believe it or not,
out,
I had no
everywhere.
Idea what that song was.
Really?
That took that long. And then I remember sitting there and just loving Minority. I loved it.
Mm,
and that's all I knew of them.
Yeah.
And then one day, about a few weeks later, my dad went to the car boot sale and bought me the Greatest Hits album, A Green Day.
Oh, yeah.
International Super Hits, it was called.
Yeah, yeah.
And that blew me away.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, Green Day, you know, this is the band I love from now on.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to learning to play guitar and wanting to be, I just wanted to be Billy Joe Armstrong.
Oh, really?
Really, yeah.
So did that then lead you to get a guitar and get interested?
Pretty much, yeah. And so there was a. I used to have a friend that lived across the road.
Mm.
This is the first experience of me ever touching a guitar.
Oh, okay,
properly,
yeah. This is great. This is like touching first boob or something. This is fantastic.
Such a good feeling.
Yeah, this is even better though, because it's about guitars. Yes.
Yeah, so, and he had a sister. That's but she had a guitar, right? There's nothing to do with sister. She had a guitar. And I was always fascinated by it. And I think my mum and dad, I mentioned to them that I'd like a guitar. And they kind of put it off for a while.
They're expensive
things. Thinking, oh, he's not going to bother with that.
Yeah. If they're going to car boot sale to buy you albums, mate, they're not bumming out on a guitar, are
they're
they?
Just, he's not going to do that. I reckon that's how they felt anyway. He's just going to smack the strings and nothing's going to come out.
Well, my parents were very much like, I mean, they were very much like, well, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
If you don't commit to it, then I've wasted all that money.
I mean... You can see their logic, can't you?
Yeah, they can, but also I mean, buy me whatever I want just in case I want it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want it. You buy it, yes.
And the thing is, my parents did buy me a guitar when I was about 8, and I did school music lessons for about 3 or 4, because there was a period in school before Thatcher got a total stranglehold on the education system and fucked it right up. We were allowed to be taught guitar. The head teacher played guitar, so we gave a couple of lessons. And then I gave it up completely. And my parents went on and on and on about how £20 was a week's wages and stuff like that and how I'd done it and why I went so wrong. So if your parents were anything like mine, I can understand them not buying the guitar. Although I'd rather think, I hope that my parents are okay with my guitar playing now.
I've got great parents for it. They know I love them. They probably hear this. They know I love them. And they give me support through whatever now. They are lovely people.
Great.
But no, like I said, a girl across the road had a guitar and her brother got it out one day, got the guitar out, and I just started playing around with it. I was like, this is fucking cool.
Really?
This is cool.
Do you remember what guitar it was? What guitar was it?
I have no idea.
Mate, electric acoustic guitar.
It was electric.
Electric. Wow. I can see that. I can see the pull to that. Yeah.
And I just sort of, I kept playing around and playing just random notes and trying to, you know, when you're trying to learn where your hand is on the string.
Because you're a lefty as well.
I'm a lefty.
You?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm cack-handed.
No. Less lefty.
And from that point on, I wanted one. And then, like I say, that corresponded at the same time as I fell in love with Green Day. And then the album American Idiot came out and it blew me away.
I'm not surprised.
And from that point I was like, right, that's what I want to do.
That's what I want to do. So then was it sort of, did you take lessons or was the album doing it?
I never bothered with lessons, guitar lessons. I just watched videos.
I guess had YouTube been invented by that point and stuff like that?
It was very early stages, but watching... like Billy Joe Armstrong play and how he was doing it.
You could see his fingers from the concerts, could you, and stuff like that.
I've been to many of their gigs.
Stared at his hands.
I went to the Milton Keynes Bowl one, the Bullet in the Bible one.
That's the first album theirs I actually owned. My brother had, is it Dookie, their first one?
Yeah.
And my brother had that when we were still teenagers. And then the first album I owned, my mate bought me Bullet in a Bible because of an anti-religious thing I'd done in my younger days. But anyway, we'll skirt rules for that. So that got you going. So then it was learning Green Day songs by ear, by eye, hook or by crook. So how did you get your first guitar then?
Well, I started with an acoustic guitar. It was a brand called Encore.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, they were very prevalent around that sort of time.
I tried to learn the entire American Idiot album.
Who bought that guitar for you? Did you buy that or did your parents?
No, my mum and dad did.
Oh, bless them.
Yeah.
Good, they came through in the end. Excellent.
It took me ages to figure out how to tune a guitar.
Right, wow.
It took me ages to learn how to do just a power chord.
Really? You worked all this out yourself?
And I just kept going and I kept going and I was like, no, I want to learn this thing.
So you didn't do music GCSE or music at school or anything like that? Or it was literally from the new information superhighway that was still in its fair infancy. I would imagine. What are we talking, late '90s, early '90s ish?
So that would have been around like 2004 onwards.
Yeah. So it was still in its infancy. Was still sort of, mucking around and stuff like that. Yeah.
But the weird thing is, so I was doing that at home on my own with this crappy acoustic guitar, which the most ridiculous action you've ever felt on it. My fingers were destroyed.
The best description I ever heard was Pete Stopford was here, and he said they like Woolworths used to sell like a Japanese made, like for factory made guitarists. You could get your head between the action on the guitar.
Yeah,
best description.
And ever. But it helped because it trained my hand
really?
To be able to really take the damage, you know.
And
with a, you know, what a Green Day song's like, it's just power goes all the way, switching around quite mad at times, and it just taught me. And I had the American Idiot songbook.
Yep.
And I learned that all the way through. I'm not a good lead guitarist, unfortunately. I'm not. I never wanted to be.
Not many
that.
People are, mate. And I think that, you know, especially around that time, it was a bit of a dying art. There wasn't a lot of rock songs that had that came around that time. All right, you know, late 80s. But once the 90s hit, guitar solos almost became, and the band I was in the 90s, almost we deliberately didn't put any guitar solos in. It was almost like the anti-hero, wasn't it, you know? And the days of the 70s, you know, rock gods spanking up and down there and stuff like that seemed to be more driven towards songs, you know, overall melodies from the vocal line, which I've noticed are very prevalent in your songs as well. So it seems to me like the focus was a bit more towards that. And for yours, I guess I can see, you know, especially with the Green Day influence, because your songs are very high energy.
Yeah, I do like to write
them. Yeah, man. Why not? Play it like it's your last gig, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Why not? So did you then think, right, I need to get in a fucking band then and do this?
Basically, yeah. I had that acoustic guitar. I then got an electric guitar, which was a Cruiser made by Crafter.
Do you buy this one yourself, or are mum and dad still funding
again,
the
wayward
career of this wayward musician? Yeah. It'll be no good. I'm looking at this from a parent's point of view now, and I'll have to say, well, I've bought my kids every instrument under the sun, and none of them will play it.
Oh, it's heartbreaking, isn't it?
It is, man.
Just play the instrument, please.
I love them just the way they are. Love them. But so we're now on electrics. Yep. We're now getting the sound. What amp did you have? Because amps are freaking expensive, aren't they?
I didn't have a very good one.
We all start with a shit.
I can't even remember where it came from.
No?
I can't. So, whatever.
You're giving them away now. You go on Facebook, people are giving them away. Some are like little crafters, whatever they are. They're like a little practice amp that I used to have all the time. People are giving them away.
Yeah, it was tiny, though. It was only
that pig nose was as big as that.
Yeah, it was tiny. It was a tiny thing.
Yeah.
Like a little cube.
Cool.
I don't know what you call them. But it was a time.
Do you know what? I'm really very glad that, because I know you were a young man, you're younger than me anyway, and I just had this impression that those days of slugging it out on crappy, cheap gear had gone. Yeah. I really worried, because I think that that's a rite of passage, in a way, to just buy shit gear, buy what you can afford, if you like, and just suck. Just... be shit,
because
there's nothing wrong with sucking, is there?
No.
Because it leads to better things if you don't do that. Because there was a period of time, you remember the brewery and stuff like that. I just remember going there, there was a period of time in the brewery, early noughties, where there was just bands, young bands and teenagers who just had the best gear. I remember walking in and these guys could not string three chords together. They had a Music Man bass, you know, and and a mess of boogie amp.
If you can't play, it's not going to make any difference, is it?
But we know now that we know about guitars, and we can probably, as you're a working man, probably got a nice one now, or a semi-nice one, I dare say. Yeah, there you go. Because you can play now, because you bought it. Exactly, there you go. Because the great thing about having a day job, if we don't want to give up, is that we can afford nice toys. But, you know, I just think these guys can't appreciate it. But also, there's a cross-section of guys who, and I was in a band one time with some guys who were quite clearly executives and stuff like that, who have super nice gear.
Yeah.
It's like gorgeous guitars and gorgeous guitars. Couldn't string three chords together. I found out that the term for that American term, this American guy I watch on YouTube, calls them blues lawyers. That's my favourite phrase. So there's lawyers. Basically, there's a whole market in America that's geared towards what they call blues lawyers. These are guys who earn $500,000 a year and then buy gold-plated drum kits.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's a whole market, like a series of, like, there's a whole, like, price brackets. They have price ranges, like any musical instruments have. It's like beginner, you know, player, pro series, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And there's a whole, like, line where they go, right, this is just for guys who just can't afford expensive shit and doesn't matter whether they pay for whether they can play it or not. So I'm really glad and really encouraged that you did, you had a similar journey there.
Yeah, it's just, it wasn't the best gear. It just wasn't. But you learn to make do with it, you know, and you learn what sounds good on the instrument, and you learn the way of playing the guitar anyway. So you can have crap gear and still make it sound good if you really, really try.
It. If you can do it on that gear, then you know, you can do it on anything.
You don't need the best gear.
No.
You don't.
I don't think you do anyway. No, I completely agree. No one's going to share it in this podcast. It's fine. It's mine. Which so we like. No, I completely agree with you, you know. And so just getting back to you.
Me.
So when did your own songs start creeping upwards then? So we've got our Green Day back catalogue and Sum 41 starting to sneak in there on the covers. Yep. When did you say, oh, that sounds nice, that's mine?
So I probably just about started finishing high school. I then went to college. But I've been writing through high school my own stuff. They were very soppy. You've probably heard the Optimus songs.
I was going to say, what kind of subject matter? Songs. Well, you see, I struggle with subject matter. I wish I could write something more worldly. Yeah. Danny R writes very worldly stuff, and it's really like poetic as well. Yeah. He does it with like well placed metaphors and stuff like that. If I start doing that, I just sound like a cheesy, you know, flag waving protester. So I stick to love songs as well. But that was you. You were a near-hearted guy then, were you? Writing songs, heart on sleeve.
Sort of, yeah. I was like, they were more like soppy love songs at the start.
Left me.
And I remember in high school, I wanted to just show people a song that I'd made.
Oh, really? You weren't shy about it then?
I was shy. This is what I'm saying. Right, I wanted to show people, but I just did not have the bollocks to do it.
Okay.
I was scared stiff of having any attention. To some degree, I still am. You know, and I just didn't believe that I could do it in front of a hall of people,
and yet that was still a little ambition in there, though, was it? See, that's quite a juxtaposition, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wanting to be like the star and show this, look what I can do, but at the same time, I ain't doing that.
Yeah,
crucify
it was a weird thing, and it took me years to get over it.
Really?
And throughout those years, I was just writing songs and writing songs. And they were kind of, like I said, they were quite soppy, more or less lovey-dovey songs. And then I started to... I finished college. I then got into... Sorry, I keep going off topic. I do apologise. I then got into a covers band. And I did that for a few years.
So what sort of covers were you doing then, let me guess?
Imagine what that was. It was all the pop punk stuff and, you know... Pop punk stuff, Green Day, Sum 41. It was all the stuff that I love.
Yeah.
And that was going really well. But that was the point of, right, I know I could do it. I could perform and not be so terrified.
So that built your confidence up.
Yeah, I remember my first gig was at a pub called The Alderman. I don't think it exists anymore. I think it's now a Tesco's Metro.
Isn't
everything? Which my brother coincidentally works
for. Or a Starbucks, yeah.
And... yeah, from there was when I started performing and realising I can do it. It did take a long time, though, and a lot of effort, and I owe a lot of it to my bass player that was in my covers band, called Less Than This, Robin Tawlett. Ever heard of him?
I haven't, I'm afraid. No, this is why I'm doing this whole thing, to try and get to know who you all are on this
He's
scene,
a friend of mine,
see?
But if it wasn't for him,
yeah.
I wouldn't have ever... actually have done it.
That's lovely that you recognise that. It really is, yeah.
He kind of forced me. He's like, no, you're doing it. You got it. You can do it. You're doing it. You're going to do it. Shut up.
It just takes that one person to believe in us, doesn't it? To say, you're great. You know, this is, you know, because you don't believe in it yourself until somebody else does. And I think that's where the validation that we seek, or I do, and a lot of other musicians I meet seek as well, that we need to know that what we're doing, because you knew even back at school there, you know, inside yourself, you knew your songs were good, but it's the validation of outside thinking, well, everyone's just going to fucking bail me on this.
Yeah, it's, like I say, if it wasn't for him pushing me, and I remember going to rehearsals, and even at rehearsals, I was shy.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do it. I wanted to do it, but I didn't. And I wouldn't push my vocals at all and stuff. And then it just clicked. It's a bit of a weird thing, but I'm not... saying, like, I just think if anyone's worried, just do it, just try.
I've got to say, the older I get, I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
It's just going to, you've got to get to that stage where you don't give a shit. What's the worst that can happen is what I say to people.
I still do care.
Sure.
Like, I worry. Like, I'm like, oh, God, you know, there's people who are not interested, you know. It's racing from my mind as I'm performing and I'm playing at a gig, or it drives me insane, actually, sometimes. If you ever come to a gig and you hear my voice go a bit, that's me worrying.
Right.
I know it now.
I thought it was just the level, because you go for it.
Because I do
go for it. You don't hold anything back.
If I'm confident, I get it.
I thought perhaps the third song in, his voice is wearing out. This is a marathon, mate, not sprint.
I remember when I did the Waterfront, the main stage, we did it for a band called Renegade 12.
I used to make their merch, actually.
Oh, did you?
I worked for a company that made t-shirts, hats and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and we made
guys,
their merch.
Good guys.
Yeah.
And they asked us to play Labour doing like an all-day thing. And I think they did their band. I think they like tripled up as an Iron Maiden band.
Blimey.
And another, I can't remember what the other band was, but they did like three different acts, I think. And I was more like, I've seen real bands play here. I'm standing where certain bands have played, you know. And I'm like, and that got to me. And my voice went for that entire gig.
I get shaky leg, my leg starts going. It's like, oh.
And I get like a panic feeling sometimes, and then I get out of breath.
Yeah.
And then I can't sing the song properly.
Yeah.
So it's still an issue.
It's still a thing.
Still an issue.
And yet, we still want to get up there and do it. Right, and there was no place, I don't know about you, there's no place I'd rather be. I mean, I have trouble going to see gigs because I want to be on the stage. I want to be there doing that.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But then you get there and you go...
It's like when you go, say, for example, to... Say you go on a little holiday camp, holiday with your family. You go to their cabaret thing at the evening and you're like... I could blow your socks off here. You know what I mean? I could go up there and sing if you wanted. Or
have too many Bacardi, start slagging them off.
I mean,
play Oasis.
I mean,
start
I won't.
Heckling.
But you know what I'm saying, don't you? You
want
to go up there and have a jam or something.
Yeah, yeah. Any excuse to get on a stage and show people what it is I can do, especially now I know, especially after playing for 34 years, I know I can actually play the bloody thing, you know, eventually get round to it. So you had your covers band. That was your first band. How old were you, if you don't mind me asking around this sort of
time?
So
I was about
school, college,
18, 19. I just finished college.
Been writing songs a while, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Did you then try and do what I used to try and sneak the odd original number into the covers band?
In the covers band.
No one will notice this. They'll think it's a Green Day song. Is that what you did?
Pretty much. Well, I was quite vocal about it. This is our song. We made this.
Good.
As soon as we got, this is our song.
Oh, well done, mate. I'd just snuck in, not introduced it.
I would tell them because I wanted them to know.
Good.
And it shows that you got... I just... If someone goes... There's nothing better... For me, and if I go to a gig and I don't know who someone is or whatever, and they go, right, this is my song, and if it's bad or good, you're doing it, you're having a go, and that means the world to me.
I always say never apologise. So this is a new one. We've never played this live before, so sorry if it goes wrong.
Yeah.
Mate, I don't care if you stop after the second verse. You've just opened your heart to me.
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying. It's an emotional exchange for you, the gigging experience then.
You know,
both watching
it's not
and performing.
It's the effort you've gone through to write a song.
Yeah.
Because you know what it's like. It can be hard work sometimes. You can get to certain points in a song and you're like, oh, where do I go from here? Do you know what I mean? Do I do a bridge here? What do I do? Do you know what I mean? Like, how do I transfer from the verse to the chorus or whatever? You know what it's like, and it can drive you crazy.
Yeah.
So for someone to go up and play something confidently, which is original music, it's just a big thing for me. It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And you just touched on something now. I want to explore a bit more with you. We said about with the songwriting process. I don't know, you write in a duo now, you said earlier that you have your ideas, send them and you knock them about. So it seems to me like, you know, and you might have just given a game away, there's some songs take a little bit more teasing out of you, or do some songs just come and it's like, because I can sit here and write a song in 5 minutes and then another one that I've been writing for 2 years now and I'll never bloody finish probably because I can't get that chorus to go into that verse just as you describe.
Yeah,
is that similar for you?
Yes and no. I mean, there's been songs that have just been like, I've gone to Az and I've gone, look, the song's written, this is how I would have it.
Yeah.
If you've got any ideas, please add them in, you know, or transpose it, or do whatever you need to do to make it so you enjoy it as well, you know. Luckily, we're quite in sync in that department.
Back in the days before, because I guess we're getting up to in your history where Azza comes into the thing. I take it he wasn't in the covers band at the time.
He was. He wasn't at first. Right. We were just a three piece at first.
Right.
And then me and Robin were kind of like, yeah, we're getting the gigs and that, but we just want that extra bit of detail. So we really, I was trying to do...
He does good detail.
I was trying to do... Rhythm and lead.
Mm.
And, you know, because I'm not a very good lead guitarist, unfortunately, songs would suffer.
Mm.
And there'd be signature parts and songs that'd be missing and stuff like that. Okay. And I just couldn't... play and sing and do lead. My brain can't do that.
No, I can't sing and play guitar at the same time. Well, I go into one strum. Yeah. But sometimes in direct correlation with how my jaw goes up and down, so does the strum arm.
Why
can't I strum when I blow?
It's annoying when, say, for example, you're writing a song and you come up with maybe a quirky piece, like the change of chords are nice, or there's a little bit of a... Maybe there is a bit of lead in there you're trying to play as you switch to a chord or something, and you're also trying to sing some lyrics to it.
Mm.
That's hard, I find.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's where Azza comes in. He can do that bit whilst I think of what I need to do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Azza's name has come up a few times in his podcast. But, Ryan Redwood speaks very well. We went to Azza for guitar lessons and stuff.
Yeah, I know they're good mates.
So you had Azza in your band, who sounds to me like he's musically trained, which for you were self-taught and stuff. Is a whiz on these things. I mean, that must have been kind of, you know, if I ever meet a musician like that, I'm always a bit intimidated.
Yeah.
But he kind of, and you guys kind of gelled nicely. Yeah. Are you a sort of bit that he's missing as well? Because I find people like that, they admire people with your skills because they don't have that particular bit.
I see what you're saying. I think most of it was he came in the band, and because of his attitude and how easygoing he actually is, it was fine. Do you know what I mean? It was just like friends getting together.
Awesome.
Which is the way it should be. Lovely. I've always kind of thought your band needs to be a happy family.
It can't
if someone's unhappy, then the vibe ain't right, you know.
And that's only going to come out through the pores eventually. I always say it's like being married to three or four other geezers.
Yeah.
So eventually you can't go to bed on that argument too long. It will come out eventually.
I mean in Optimist, luckily there is no arguments, really. It's they're happy to just let. I'm really lucky, actually, in that respect, because like my bass player and my drummer, they're both normally pretty in tune on what we're doing. They're happy with it.
Great.
Okay.
Well, especially with such a driving force that you guys have, because I want to get onto it, but you know, that if I was in their position, I'd just be very privileged to feel part of something that has momentum. You know, you're recording, you're writing, you're doing the promo, you're getting gigs. I mean,
I do struggle with the promo, though.
Do you really?
I hate Facebook, mate. I've heard you say it as well, sort of thing. You know, it does my head in.
It's just an energy and time vortex. Of black hole.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, Jesus. But if you don't, no one's going to know. And for the demographic that I look at as well, I mean, Facebook's generally considered these days to be over 35s. Ryan Redwood always says it's boomers. He says, I don't want to be on the boomers. Yeah. So he tries. But I don't have the time. I don't have the time to open four different social media platforms and spam the shit out of them with all my posts. So I guess your drummer and bass player, apart from the fact that they're in a great musical band, they're also part of something that, I guess, or do they get involved in all that promo stuff as well? This always fascinates me. Do they get involved in the promo bits?
No, I would say not so much. It is pretty much me doing it, as it does the occasional bit as well. I always do say, if you want to do anything,
step in, chaps.
If you ever do want to just play something, like even if it was like playing the drums to one of our tracks, just something.
Yeah.
You know, you'll go ahead, but they're busy men as well. So
sure.
It is hard, and I'm doing it. I don't really do much, unfortunately.
Mm.
It is hard.
It is, isn't it?
I've got my little boy to worry about, and yeah, I am working full-time all the time.
We can't give up the day job just like that. No. Mate. But you can, and continue to, in whatever form you can, create awesome music.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I did notice that there's I mean, in my genre, they kind of like albums. They kind of like, you know, some more towards the blues. And if you send a blues radio station or blues, you know, promoter, like, you know, a single or an EP, they'll go, well, where's the rest of it?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you sound like a kind of prolific guy. But if you don't mind me saying, and I'm not, you know, trying to draw attention to it or anything like that, but you've got like singles and EPs.
Yeah.
Is that a marketing? Is that a conscious marketing thing? Or is that just like recording is expensive? Or what was the thinking behind doing EPs and singles rather than going albums?
Well, originally, there's been so many different plans that have changed.
Right.
And a lot of it is just down to time.
Right.
To be honest, I'm not going to lie. It's just,
no, that's fine.
It's quite hard sometimes to get us all in a room.
Okay, yeah.
Even to rehearse sometimes. You might not see it on set, but sometimes it can be tricky.
And, you're always a tight ass.
You know, our drummer, he comes from Ipswich and comes down here.
Yeah.
So it's a big effort, really, okay. I mean, to just come down for rehearsal and then bugger off back to Ipswich. Yeah, so yeah. I'm grateful he does it. Mm. But it's mostly just down to time.
Oh, that's cool. I was wondering if it was some sort of marketing thing. Like I say, I gave in to the marketing thing, and I hate having to, you know, bend what it is I do in order to suit what I think might get my stats up or get me noticed. So I'm really glad that it's an organic thing for you. That's awesome. So getting back to you, rolling back to the history there. So as I was in the covers band, did like Optimist, just quickly, where did the name come from? Because it's like, I honestly didn't know how to pronounce it sometimes. So I'm like, are they like optimists? Or do they like and appreciate optimists? I love optimists. Yeah, they're so chival.
I remember this was when I was in the covers band, and we were playing, do you know Dan Beckles Key?
Mm.
Where they did the big, is it the Harvest Moon gig?
Yes, they do a little festival, yeah.
And we turned up.
Mm.
And they were running really behind, and really, like we didn't know when we were going on. In the end, they went, "Boys, we're really sorry, but you can't play. We're not going to have the time."
Mm.
And as you can imagine, we were pretty cheesed off. Mm. We rehearsed hella loads for this. Do you know what I mean? Like we rehearsed for like a whole week for this, and we were pretty bummed out about it. And I just went to Az, I looked at him. He already knew I had an idea about doing a originals band.
Oh, so it's still a covers band,
I
right?
need to be more optimistic, like rubbing my head in frustration. Like, yeah, just, you need to be more like an optimist. And I just went, like Optimist. That's a nice name. And that was it. That's where it come from.
Had a great logo too. Who does your graphics?
That is mainly our drummer.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, he's very good. You know, every like EP cover, anything like that, awesome. Yeah. That like blue orange, like cutting up, brilliant.
I mean, absolutely the latest brilliant. One though, the little heart.
The heart, taped in half, yeah.
That was me.
Was it?
On Canva.
Canva's awesome. Do you know what? Really I couldn't recommend it enough. I recommended it to a radio station fella, Neil Jones, Smart Radio, and he was doing posters on God knows what in Word, I think, or something. I went, just have a look at this little app and see for free. All of a sudden, these shiny, sparkly posters started coming out. It's great though. Highly recommend Canva. Get Canva on. There's no excuse for bad artwork anymore.
I mean, I did have a subscription.
Yeah. Oh, did you? So you had all the nice stuff.
I got the nice stuff, but I obviously cancelled that because the cost of living is extremely high now.
Cheers then, Tory bastards.
Yeah, thanks for
cheers
that.
Then, thanks ever so much. We can't afford Canva. No. Bring the price of living down so that we can get a graphics good on our music.
Throw more creativity out the window. Cheers, boys.
So you and Az stood there and went, you should be more like an optimist. And he was like, ooh.
That's a nice name. That's literally it.
Okay, and then I take it then, and you know, it was then like, right, let's do more original stuff then.
Yeah. I mean, when it came to becoming an originals band, I was obviously in my covers band. I was in there for quite a while.
Yeah.
And And no disrespect to the music that we were playing. I loved every track we were playing. I loved everything we were doing.
Yeah.
I loved that we were gigging so much. Yep. We were making a bit of money, which was always nice. Yep. I don't make any money now, really, obviously.
There always seems to be some sort of, I don't know, I mean, only from, like, there's a few Facebook forums, like Coverband Central and stuff like that, where they're a bit sort of snooty about it. Originally, there seems to be, that, or they want to promote that there is a division between an originals band and a covers band. Like, there's a nice meme of a guy drying his eyes with, you know, with pound, with dollars, you know, with dollar notes, saying, you know, how I feel when, you know, you talk to me that you don't make money out of your originals band, ha ha. It's like, well, you know, there is a cultural shift that you do it because you want your songs to be heard, but there's money to be made, maybe not as much as the covers. I mean, I've got total respect for any cover. I mean, I'm in a covers band playing guitar, and I've only recently turned back to original numbers and had great fun and earned reasonable amounts of money in both.
Yeah.
You know?
I just, when it came to doing the covers, if I'll be honest, I just got sick of doing it.
Right, right.
You know, I had all these songs and that I wanted to show people and just get them tracked. And that's when I said to you earlier, like, that was kind of a dream for me. So I met Azza, he had the gear.
Yeah, yeah.
And he went, come round and we'll sort it out. We'll get it tracked. And so I was getting my music tracked, at least. Do you know what I mean? And I couldn't afford to do it at a studio. So I'm just lucky, really. I was so really lucky.
How do you, because your end, like, end, the end recordings and stuff like that are polished. Out, they're really nice. I mean, if the first one I called demos.
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sake, if I'd have produced demos like that in the '90s, I'd be over the freaking moon. The recording quality is amazing.
We said we'll just call it demos for now because we weren't too happy, to be honest.
Yeah, you're kidding me. The production was amazing.
How they were, but we knew that with time, because Azza at the time was still learning how to produce.
So does he do all the production, mixing, mastering, the whole lot?
He does it all.
Really, that's really good.
I do nothing
good.
Of that.
It's so it's very. It is very, like, just like pop punk, it is very sort of, there's like a sparkle on it, you know. I wouldn't want to say it's as good as Blaze, because he's my favourite.
No, he's good. My solo EP was good.
Yes. We'll get on to the solo stuff, mate. I want to talk to you about that. So, yeah, then we're sneaking in, and not necessarily sneaking in or, you know, overtly doing original numbers. You're doing an original band. Did you keep the same drummer and bass player, or did you get these new boys in?
I had, so in the covers band, we had a drummer called Art, he left. And then we had Dan, he left. And then we had Gavin, I can't remember. There's a few drummers.
And then we
stopped playing because I announced that I'm really sorry, I don't want to do this no more.
Okay. Did they take it all right?
Yes and no, I think. Yeah. You know, I did feel selfish and I was sorry.
Are you still friends with him?
Yeah, I still talk to him. Not as much as I used to, obviously. It pops up conversation.
I don't like many of your optimists' posts, then, I do.
I don't know. It is.
They haven't hit the like button on this new optimist single.
I really don't know, but I'm not going to say anything about that. But, and I just said, I don't want to do it anymore. And I'd already spoken to Azza about, I'd love to do an originals band. I've got these songs. You've heard a few of them. Me just sending you what I've recorded. Do you want to go for it? And we did.
And we all. Well, I'm glad that you did.
Like the band members together. And when James came along, because he actually was in my covers band at the end.
Right.
So we stopped and we had a reunion gig, and we didn't. The other guys weren't really into doing it, so At the time, my bass player was in another band. I think they were called Punk Pop Jukebox.
Oh, yeah, they were great.
Yeah, that was Darren's band. Yeah. And a really good laugh. Good band, fun. A really good band.
Darren loves his pop punk, doesn't he?
He goes nuts as well.
It's very knowledgeable.
It's very entertaining.
Well, he lacks in talent. He makes up for in enthusiasm and entertainment, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So he just asked James from there if he wouldn't mind filling in for a gig, and he did. And then
great.
We finished, and I said, James, do you want to do my originals band?
Amazing.
And that was it.
And that's it. Yeah. So you've literally been in, if I'm reading this right, two bands in your life?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
And I did when there's been some shifts in Optimus, like obviously we had Will Murray as our bass player. I mean,
but you do have your core of you and answer to that, don't you?
Yeah.
It's like you know, for example, we look at, I don't know if you heard of Dr. Feelgood, but they have no original members in that band. Yeah, they are quite literally their own tribute act.
Wow.
They're still going out as Dr. Feelgood. It's like, there's no original members. I'm not going to see that band. I don't give a shit if they hear this either, but I'm not going to see that band. it's just like, I want to see Wilco Johnson chewing the inside of his cheek, going crazy. I mean, I did see the original Feelgoods back in the early 90s, and Lee Brillo was still alive, you don't know what I'm talking about now, and they were legendary, absolutely legendary, sort of. They were a very pubby, very punky band. You'd probably really dig some of their stuff, yeah.
Like
Roxette and stuff, like, oh, cracking. Yeah, but early stuff. Not the band, no. So, you'd probably find that there's way down the line. Obviously, you like American punk more than the sort of British scene with that. But, I think you dig that. So, yeah, there's still a core to your band of you and Ezra and stuff like that.
And like I said, we had Will Murray. He was our bass player at first. Fortunately, things weren't quite working out. There was like a bit of a shift in the vibe, and I felt it. And I hate talking about it, to be honest, but because again,
you brought it up, mate.
I know, but an originals band is like having another family to me.
Yeah, it's awkward, isn't it? Yeah, it's awkward, and if you like, I mean, I do that. I mean, if it gets to the point where I'm just about to walk out the door, and I turn to my missus and I go, she goes, "Why are you going?" Well, I don't know, you feel obliged. You feel like it is a family.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just grin through, you know, it's like going to a family Christmas, isn't it? You grin through the turkey. It's only for a day. There's another rehearsal next week. But, you know, it's very brave and difficult to be able to bring up these issues and move forward as well, isn't it? And I learned the hard way. I was in a band called Nexus in the late 90s. And I kept my gob shut for ages about things.
I heard you say about this on your last podcast.
Yeah, so I repeat myself.
That's all right.
I'm old. But yeah, I kept my gob shut for ages.
That I've listened to your podcast.
Thanks, man. You're that guy. You're the one stat I've got on there.
Oh, good.
It's good to know it's you.
Proud to be.
Are you going to listen to yourself on the podcast? That's the main one, isn't it?
I look forward to it. Definitely. I don't. My voice is terrible. I'm really not looking forward to it.
Not at all, man. You got great. It's a voice. You're talking, and it's like being honest and talking about things honestly. Then it's fine, is it? Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
really, really, it doesn't. So band politics, you know, and the bass player and saying, "Look, mate, this ain't kind of working out." Then no.
Yeah, well, like I say, the vibe was just wrong, and I noticed we were chatting less because of it, and rehearsals were getting a little bit
tense,
and there were a few parts where we would argue a little bit, and I never wanted that.
I always think it's weird when people say, "Oh, you know, you see the famous bands." Let's take this out of like personal experience and talk about the famous bands because they don't know. And you watch these documentaries whereby they're having a bit of thing, and they say, "Oh, it's part of the creative process." Now, I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think anything should be that much hard work.
No,
and maybe at their level, and perhaps at our level, because we've got to get up and go to work.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, on a Thursday night, if I don't want to go to a room, a sweaty small room, and argue with three guys, I'd rather be at home watching a TV with a wife and kids. To be fair.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's like I say, it needs to be a right. Do you know what I mean? The whole environment needs to be calm. It needs to be. That's how I feel, anyway. I like nothing better than have everyone get on and create your own little song.
It's got to be fun, isn't it? Because eventually, I believe that conveys to the audience. I mean, if you have that in a practice room, then you'll have that on stage, because especially at our level, no one's that professional to like switch it off.
Yeah.
And just pretend they're having a great time and you all get on. It will bleed over and your audience won't be having a good time, because if they think, this is awkward, they'll feel a vibe. I genuinely believe that. And if you're having a good time, like Danny and I are always having a chat, and it's like we drive down to Bury St Edmunds, you know, chatting in a van, having a laugh, taking a piss out of each other, and we just get on stage and carry on.
Yeah.
And people feel that vibe. I genuinely believe that. If you're having a nice time, so will they.
Yeah, that's 100%. But like when I obviously said, look, things aren't working, and I'll just state now, I love the guy. I still talk to him now. He's just brought a new single out, actually. For him, yeah. He's got a band called, his own little project called Free Divorces.
Okay.
And the song's called Cheap Hotel.
Excellent.
And I love it, actually.
That's a great
so,
name.
So have a listen. Okay. But yeah, so like I said, I said, look, I'm going to have to let you go. I don't, that was one of the hardest things I've ever done. That was awful. I didn't enjoy it at all. But so bless his heart, he said, well, we've still got gigs, I'll play to keep you. I could screw you over, but I'm not gonna. So I think we had that level of respect for each other, and we still do.
Yeah.
You know, I still talk to him, and yeah, so, and then Cam came along and filled in the gap. But I remember playing with Will on those gigs that we was filling in, and I just felt heartbroken. It was like two or three.
So good.
And I was looking at him because he's a fantastic performer. He's a fantastic player.
Yeah.
But that's just that issue. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And man, I was heartbroken. It's not the same for a while. And I myself, and they probably don't know this, and they're probably going to hear this. I nearly folded it all together.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, that's how it's, what it's like. No.
So you thought to yourself, if this is an original band, if this has got to be, I don't actually want it.
Yeah, I kind of took like a mini break, so to speak. Because I took a month I think I was only like 3 weeks where I just didn't play any music. I stopped after.
I don't know about you, but I get more like that. Time was that I'd say, I quit altogether. I'm done. And now I just find that I just need a little rest. So just before Christmas, I did the same. About November time, I went, I can't. I just need a break.
Do you ever go through like a writer's block where you just can't write anything?
Oh, yeah. It was about 15 years, last one.
That's when you know you need a break. That's a long one.
I got very disheartened after Nexus and didn't write anything. Just, just because I thought my ideas were shit and my songs were shit. So I just didn't have any confidence.
Yeah.
And I think I got to an age where I just couldn't give a fuck. I mean, I was talking to Paul when Paul Johnson came over. He's talking about levels of giving a fuck, and I kind of thought, well, you know, I don't really care if anybody's listening or not. I don't care if anyone hates it or not. And what I actually discovered was that if people listen to your songs, you're actually really, 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 really lucky. Because I don't know about you, but my listening stats ain't very high at all, and nobody's listening, so I could pretty much play whatever the fuck I really, really wanted to, bad, good, and not have to worry whether it's bad or good. Obviously, I want to produce something good that I'm happy with.
Yeah.
And I think that becomes the level. If I'm happy with it, then it's going out.
Yeah.
You know, and it's built my confidence up. You know, I've taken a bit of a hit at the moment. Things haven't gone great with my last album. But, yeah, I think maybe I'm coming up for another little rest. I don't know. I've got a bunch of gigs this summer, so maybe I'll rest for the winter.
Yeah.
But instead of saying, I think, you know, I think maybe as artists we shouldn't do that. I'm giving up. I'm turning it in. We should do what you did there and what I've come to do more often and go, I just need a little break, Phyllis. Yeah.
Never stop.
Just have a break. Yeah. And it's absolutely, it really does, yeah? Does. Because turning in all your gear and sick, because I've done it before, sold all my guitars. I had some beautiful guitars. I had a Rickenbacker 335. It was 1985.
Do you regret it now?
336. Yeah, I really do. It was gorgeous. Man. It cost me £850 back in the day. I was quite into my guitar playing. I was about 19.
Yeah.
And I've got an HP. And I was like, I'd really got into it and then flogged it. I'm giving up. I'm not playing. Fuck this. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
And yeah, really regret it. So that's why we're absolutely random here with all this musical equipment now.
Yeah.
Tell me about your solo stuff, mate. Tell me about that.
So that is basically, again, I've got quite a big catalogue of songs that I've written.
And like we're saying, I don't want to say a small amount of input, but you've got the output that you can achieve with the resources and time that you have. However, it must be frustrating that you've got this big catalogue.
It's really annoying.
Yeah.
But again, it's having the time this day and age, isn't it? You know, we've all got work. I can't give up the day job, unfortunately.
No.
I've got a house to pay for and a kid. I can't mess about too much.
No.
But the solo stuff is just stuff that I thought is ready to be recorded, but it's not quite Optimists. Sure. You know what I mean?
Did you still get Azza to record that for you? Or did
it
you
may say, as well have been Optimist. Because he came and featured and done some of the lead.
Hello, mate, can I record my solo stuff? Can you be on it? And it's just be me.
Luckily, again.
He's such a good guy.
I'm so lucky. He's like, yeah, I'll come and slap some lead down for you. I was like, bless him. Thanks, mate. And we had a really good day.
We that all need a bandmate like
studios,
that.
Yeah. That was as well.
That was at Blaze, was yeah. it? Okay, cool.
And, you know, Raoul's like, he's excellent, isn't he?
He's just a wonderful guy, yeah.
He's so easy to work with as well. And yeah. I'm meaning to go back there to do...
Well, he's building the new studio, isn't he?
I know.
Ooh.
But I don't know how far he's got with it yet.
Well, I think last time I spoke to him, Roof was half on, and I saw a little video... Yeah. And I saw him about a month or so ago. He was playing down the Jolly Sailors down the road here
yeah.
with his floating greyhounds. And, yeah, he said it's taking his time, but it wants done properly. He's prepared to wait because this is a live stream. So yeah. I don't know if it's going to be done this year. Yeah. But it was beautiful. It's like half sunken. And it's just like, what? I need to get in there. But he says he might have some sort of open day or something like that for pods that have recorded there. So hopefully, fingers crossed, mate, we'll get a little input in there. So did you go over and record that over there, or did you just send in for mix and mastering?
No, I did go over there and record it. That was a really nice day, actually, just being an experience in an actual studio.
So I'd live in a studio. I spend so much time up in here. It's great. I mean, you talk about like not being able to like doing your own stuff and having Azza, but I mean, yeah, that's why I have this like microphones in front of you and a recording suite on here because I wanted to do my own. I wanted to record my own stuff, but I didn't know anybody, so I had to go. I didn't have an Azza. Everybody needs an Azza.
Again,
everyone needs an Azza. What a guy! So yeah, I need one of those. So yeah, I had to learn.
Give him a belt.
That's the bloody 3 years too late. I've got all this crap now.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah. So, is you starting to record the solo stuff? Is there going to be more of that?
Yeah, I've already got a second EP planned.
Yeah.
But obviously, I've asked you if you wouldn't mind coming on.
I'd love to, mate. I'd love to do some.
There might be a few more songs on this one. There's only three on the other.
Mm.
My first EP is called Loathe. And then the second one, I think there's going to be 5 songs.
Mm.
I'm still unsure on that, but either way, there'll be a second EP with some tracks on it.
Awesome. So as far as subject matter with new EP, are we still soppy love songs? Is the wife well pleased with all the soppy love songs that you write, or are they?
They are. They're kind of the soppier songs I have.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get the first song I ever written.
I don't know what the right word is.
Wrote that.
I wrote a song.
No, the first song I ever wrote is a song called Don't Make a Fuss.
Mm.
And I could, at the time, because I was so young, I could barely play a guitar.
Mm.
And I was just making things up. And it was like, I remember doing, the chord shape for a D.
Vaguely.
Yep.
Well, I'm having guitar lessons going, myself at the moment.
If I play it up here, it's really high and sounds lovely.
Mm.
So I just started moving this chord around and I made a song out of it. And that'll be on there.
Excellent. Good,
and
good.
That's probably the soppiest song I've ever written.
Yeah.
But it's a nice song.
Have you ever thought about getting your own recording gear and
going like that?
Yeah, and then thought, if I've got Azza, why the fuck do I need to?
I would love to be able to. It's just money, unfortunately.
I
don't know if I've got time to learn the ins and outs of it. I just haven't.
Well, you got 10-15 years on me. So
I mean, I have been there with Azza, and he sort of showed me some things. And when he records his set back of vocals and stuff, he'll be like, "Just hit that one there."
Jesus.
He'll tell me that.
Yeah.
But if I was to sit there now and go, I'd be like, "What am I doing again?"
I find it convenient for, especially with guys of our lifestyle, full time jobs, no kids and stuff like that. I find this setup convenient for going up and laying down a quick track. So if I've got a little idea, or I've been working on ideas, so I get a chunk of time, like a Sunday afternoon, and I've recorded bass, drums, guitar, and I need to put a little bit of harmonica solo, I can nip up, do a little harmonica solo, go downstairs again. The wife's like, where have you been? And I'm like, upstairs, rocking out.
Yeah. You've done the washing. No, I was playing harmonica.
No, so. I lift up 5 minutes, play mouthful, and it was great.
I'll do it now. That's what I was like in my house.
So we're sharing a gig, aren't we? We're sharing a stage.
Yeah.
What's Darren calling it? He's organised an all day. Jubilee
Jamboree.
Jubilee Jamboree.
That's it.
Which
should be good.
Yeah, it'll be great, mate. On the 5th to celebrate the unelected Scrounger's Day.
Yeah.
I didn't vote for her. But anyway, I'm sure that's upset a few people more than anything else I've said on this podcast. I normally get crucified.
Have you upset people before?
Not on the podcast. No, not anyone said anything. I think the listening figures go down. But my anti-royal stance usually upsets people quite a lot. Really? But that's just my opinion.
Fair
enough. Anyone got opinions? One, yeah, everyone's got one. Like arseholes, everyone's got one and they stink. So that's... So we're looking out for more solo stuff. Are we going to see some just like, you know, more Optimist stuff coming on?
Yeah, there's actually a plan to kind of slowly release an EP because, again, time is an issue for us. Yeah. It's just the way it is.
I love that it's organically like that because you're doing what you can. Instead of putting pressure on yourself and saying, I need to be doing this, you know, because that can make me, you know, personally for me, that'll make me want to give up as soon as anything else and go, do you know what, I haven't got time to do all that, so I'm out. So you're doing what you can, and I think that's great.
Yeah, and like there is an EP coming, and the first two songs are out. There's The Stress and Just Like Yours.
Yeah.
So the next one will just be added, and it's a dodgy way of doing it, but they're just going to end up in an EP. So you're obviously on Spotify, single, 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 single. Next day, oh, let's have a look. Oh, they got an EP. Oh, it's just the singles. In an EP.
It's new music,
we don't know.
Yeah,
it's just an idea. Other bands are doing that at the moment.
Yeah.
We've noticed. So. And again, that could be down to time, that could be down to money, down to anything really. But
we don't all have to play the marketing game, do we?
Seems to think as well, because he's quite a Switzerland lad.
He seems a bit savvy on that stuff.
Yeah, that the single, releasing them as singles, it does well for the algorithm and stuff of Spotify. I mean, I don't know.
Me either.
But
me either, mate.
I trust him.
Yeah, yeah. He seems to be pretty bloody good at everything else, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's annoying, isn't it?
And he's good looking and all.
I know.
God damn it.
The women love it.
He's a beautiful guy. He really is.
But that's just the way we're doing it at the moment. I mean, look, I know what songs we're going to release next. There's kind of... They're already soft tracked, so to speak. You know, they're demoed.
They've got scratch tracks, as we call it, and stuff like that.
I don't know. A soft track was just something I just thought of.
Yeah, no, I like it. No, that's good. Better than the hard track. So, are they going to be in the same sort of musical vein? Because we didn't really talk. I guess we talked about your influences, and I've got to say that I think it's fair to say that your music is very on your influences. You know, it's very pop punky. It's very full on. It's big energy.
I can't get
big
away
guitar
from it.
Sounds. Well, you know, and why should you? Because it sounds fucking great, to be honest. Is that going to be more in that sort of vein?
Yeah.
Write a ballad anytime soon.
I have got one.
Have you?
And I wrote it for my wife. She says I didn't, but I did.
Was she blame? You wrote it for your ex. You loved her. Well, you wrote it for some girl.
Well, see, the argument is I had the song ready.
Do you know what? Writing a song and having a row about it is hilarious, isn't it? You know, bloody hell.
She says that I wrote it before I met her, and she's kind of right.
Well, mate, it sounds to me like you've written her 1,000 songs already.
I had no one
spoiled.
To give it to. So that's your song, sweetheart.
like. It's like buying an engagement ring, isn't it? This is for you. No, you bought that for the last one. It's just a song, man. What? How many other songs have you written about her? Must be hundreds. I'm calling your wife ungrateful on air. What am I doing?
It's called If You See Her, and that is going to come out eventually.
Yeah,
and I'll dedicate that to her,
whether she likes it or not.
Whether she likes it or not. Yeah. But no, like I was saying, I know what songs are going on the next EP. They will be in the same sort of thing.
Good.
Same vein as the last tracks. There's one I've been wanting to get out for like 2 years now, since I've written it. It's called Jester. And that is, you know, when like, I don't want to sit here and, you know, like blow your own
But you can stand up and do it if you like, mate.
But I'm really proud of that song. You're proud of it, are
you? Do you know what? We're not proud of things enough, as I think part of almost like some sort of British culture, we're not proud of things. You two always said that, you know, they never got went down well in England because being good at something is one thing, being proud of it is unforgivable in England.
Yeah.
And, you know, why shouldn't you be proud of it? You want to be modest, but I mean, I love your stuff and I think they're well written, well made songs. So there you go. I'm doing it. I've built you up already. So yeah, tell me about this song.
It's just quite a personal song, so to speak.
That's difficult to do, though, right?
It's powerful.
Yeah.
It's anthemic, or whatever the word is. Is that the word?
I think so. It sounds good to me.
I'm not good with words.
Nope. You just write songs. You write songs, you must be good at words.
Well, I suppose so.
Well, you're not going to write a novel anytime soon, I dare say. But, you know, I know what you mean when you say you're not going to write. Expressing yourself outside of your music is probably difficult, which is why we write songs, to express ourselves, because we are difficult. Musicians do find it difficult, I have found, to open up about stuff until you get them talking for about an hour or so, and then they spill their guts, mostly when the tape turns off.
Yeah.
But, you know, so what, you express yourself through your music, right?
Try to, yeah. And if I mean, trouble is as well, is that when you hear the Optimus tracks, they're all kind of related to the same issues. If you really, really look at them, and they're all sort of mental health issues and stuff.
Great.
And
good.
To me, it's always been an important...
Well, I'm saying good like it's good that you're talking about it, not good that you have mental health issues. But, you know, I do too. You know, I saw a therapist for absolutely years and has been on and off medication for a really long time. And I'm really glad that we're talking about it. And why shouldn't we? There's not enough songs that could be written about it. God knows there's enough love songs, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, when you look at the songs and that, they are like about mental health issues, but they all kind of meld into one if you really look at the overall theme of it.
Mm.
And I try to break out of that, but I just can't. And,
trying to be optimistic about it, are you?
Yeah, and it's kind of, you know, it's a bit of a weird weird concept when I think of it like that.
Yeah, yeah. So let me get it straight, you try and write songs that aren't.
And I'm like, well, no.
Never disappointed, though, are you?
It's ironic, I guess. You know, it's just the way...
So you keep trying to write songs that aren't like that and end up writing songs
that they always go back to that. I mean,
Don't fight it.
That we released... what's it called again? Just Like Yours. It's...
What's my own song called? I don't know. Great.
It's bad when you forget your lyrics as well.
How many times have you done that? You know, there's like the intro's gone.
Quite a lot.
Everyone's building up to the song. You walk up to the microphone. I've done that. Got right up to the microphone and thought...
A lot.
What are the words?
And then you start playing a chord or just
doing, a bit of solo or something. Yeah. Like do a solo and they're looking at you like you're supposed to start. I know!
The amount of times I've gone to Azza or Cam who's standing next to me, I'm like, what's the first lyric? And they'll just say a word. And I'm like, oh yeah.
It's funny how that triggers it, doesn't it?
Yeah,
just that first word triggers the whole verse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad they know the songs.
I've sung the same verse three times in a row. I mean, with blues, nobody cares, to be honest. They think that's how it is anyway. It's woman anyhow or something, you know, done left him.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, mate, it's been absolutely fabulous talking to you. I really appreciate you coming up.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you'll have to come back and drag Azza with you next time.
Yeah, maybe I will. Bless him.
So I'll put some details on where everyone can find you and listen to you in the sort of bio for this podcast. But Nathan, thanks ever so much, man.
Thank you for doing what you're doing.
We love it. And I'll hopefully see you again soon. Well, I'll definitely see you in June for the
I'll be there.
for the Jubilee celebrations. And thank you very much.
Thank you.